You're listening to KSUT's Four Corners Edition. I'm Lorena Richards. Colorado lawmaker will debate a bill early next year that would let cyclists slowly cruise through stop signs if no other traffic or pedestrians are around. KSUT's Capital Coverage reporter Scott Franz has more.
Financial analyst Chris Brown says it would take more than a single beer to explain all the nuances of Proposition 120 to the average voter. It's touted as a permanent 9% property tax cut for business and homeowners. But
it really might be the case that what voters see on their ballot and what they vote on is not the final outcome in terms of the impact to their tax bill.
Brown is a researcher at the nonpartisan Common Sense Institute based in Greenwood Village.
The state legislature this year passed Senate Bill 293, which intentionally changed and altered some of the property tax classifications.
This resulted in a lowering of property taxes by about $200 million for the next fiscal year. But knowing that this measure was in the works, the bill also had a side effect, limiting who could actually get a tax break if Proposition 120 passed.
This appears to be a poison pill against the proposition.
Republicans, including Senator Ray Scott of Grand Junction, were concerned lawmakers were trying to water down a tax cut being pursued by voters.
If taxpayers, single-family homeowners in particular, approve it, only multifamily property owners get a 9% break.
But Senator Chris Hansen, a Denver Democrat, defended the legislation, saying single-family homeowners should be treated differently because governments tend to spend more money providing services to them, from trash collection to firefighters.
And some studies have shown that as much as a 50% reduction in capital investment and a 15% reduction in service costs for high-density developments.
In other words, letting single-family homeowners get another tax break would result in a much bigger hit to the state's checkbook.
Again, layers of complexity here.
Which brings us back to today. Chris Brown says the battle over Proposition 120 may not end on Election Day.
If voters approve this, the final impact will be determined in courts.
And this is already on the mind of conservative activist Michael Fields. As the author of Proposition 120, he says he would probably be the one suing the legislature if it passes.
This is money that is not in people's pockets then. They're spending on taxes. You know, what other things do they struggle with when government, you know, has bounced back quicker than anybody expected?
Fields says property values have gone up rapidly during the pandemic, adding that lawmakers did not go far enough with their tax cuts. But others are involved, including local governments, fire departments, and school boards, all stand to lose hundreds of millions of dollars if voters agree to the ballot question. Studies suggest it would hurt the most in resort counties like Pitkin and Eagle.
It just exacerbates the inequities that exist within our communities.
That's Amy Baca Olert. She leads the Colorado Education Association, the state's largest teachers union.
Those communities that have been able to go to their voters and to ask for voters to, raise their taxes to support their local school districts. And even when that happens in some communities, because they have a lower property tax base, it's not the same as that happening in, you know, say maybe the neighboring community.
But many are struggling because of the pandemic, and supporters like Fields say they need relief now.
I think about people on fixed incomes, seniors, people that are living paycheck to paycheck. You know, a big increase in property taxes can have a big impact in them keeping their houses over the long term.
Certainly, we have all struggled, especially recently through COVID.
But Olert hopes voters will also think about the ripple effects.
I would hope that people would take the time, as any good educator would say, to do your homework, to really understand what are the unintended consequences of voting on something like this could have.
If Proposition 120 is approved and courts do not overturn the law the legislature passed, Chris Brown says the immediate impact of 120 would shrink from $1 billion in cuts to about $150 million, and only commercial, multifamily, and lodging properties would get tax breaks. Regardless, Brown says school districts would be shielded somewhat by the billions in federal coronavirus relief money they've been getting.
Now, it's not a perfect one-to-one match in terms of being able to use those COVID dollars in the same way. However, a lot of that money can be used to fill priorities and needs.
Opponents of 120 counter that permanent tax cuts could reduce the state's ability to respond to wildfires that are larger because of ongoing drought. To cushion the blow, supporters included a provision letting the state keep up to $25 million annually that it otherwise could not spend because of the Taxpayer Bill of Rights, or Tabor Amendment. I'm Scott Franz in Denver.
The U.S. Senate Energy Subcommittee on Water and Power held a hearing in Washington, D.C. Wednesday about ongoing drought conditions. As KUNC's Alex Hager reports, they heard from water experts from several western states.
With the backdrop of a steadily decreasing water supply, experts hammered home the widespread effects of a future with less to go around. Jennifer Pitt is with the environmental nonprofit Audubon Society.
The Colorado River provides drinking water to 40 million people. It's the lifeblood for 30 federally recognized tribes. It's the silent utility underpinning a trillion-dollar economy.
The director of Arizona's water department said the path forward relies on good data and collaboration, including voluntary conservation measures in a river basin where water issues transcend state, tribal, and national borders. I'm Alex Hager.
Mail-in ballots for registered voters across Colorado are expected to be in mailboxes next week. KSUT's Sarah Flower reports on what to expect in this year's election.
2021 is not a major election year, but in Southwest Colorado, contentious school board races across the region are filling this year's ballot, in addition to three statewide issues. Election Day is on Tuesday, November 2nd, with mail-in ballots being sent out the week of October 11th. This all comes at a time where voting rights and election fraud allegations are still spiraling throughout the nation over the 2020 election. And now, with the recent allegation of election security breaches in Mesa County, clerk and recorders all across the state are under close watch. Tiffany Lee is the clerk and recorder for La Plata County. This election year, now more than ever, Lee says she'll be focusing on security and transparency with the voters in her county.
It's very unfortunate, but we're all taking hits for it. And that's the piece that is so important to me, to get out to the public, to welcome them to come to my office. I give tours during the election. Our audits, again, are all open to the public. You can sit down with me and I can explain the whole process to you. And just to ensure, you know, voters deserve that. And it's such an important right. And they deserve to have it treated with the utmost respect, integrity, and security.
As part of that extra added layer of security this year, Lee says she'll be double-checking all votes.
We do have the Dominion voting system in Colorado. There's 64 counties, 62 of us have Dominion. I wholly believe in it. I know the system very well. We do our own ballot programming here in La Plata County. However, the voters are feeling a lot of mistrust because of all the bad information that's out there. So I went ahead and contracted with the other vendor, which is called Clear Ballot. So I'm going to actually run the ballots through two systems this election. So I can prove to the voters that not only is Dominion working well, but I want them to feel like, let's just, you know, really make sure.
The security of mail-in ballots has left some voters across the nation skeptical of the system. According to Lee, La Plata County has used some form of mail-in ballots for almost 30 years. In fact, she says that 98% of all of her voters vote by mail.
In La Plata County, we started in 1992 doing mail ballots. People don't realize that, but in elections like what's coming up this November, that would have been a mail ballot. Then in 2010, we started doing the primaries also by mail. And then, of course, in 2013, when we completely revamped Colorado election law, we went to an all-mail ballot state with the option to come in person if you choose to.
La Plata County voters' ballot will have school board races in Bayfield, Ignacio, and Durango. Montezuma Cortez School District has six open board seats, while four candidates vie for two seats for the Dolores School District. The only county in the region not voting for school board election is in Archuleta. As far as the ballot goes for statewide issues, there is one constitutional amendment and two ballot initiatives. Amendment 78 focuses on legislative authority for spending state money. The last issue on the ballot is Proposition 120, which talks about the property tax assessment rate reduction and voter-approved revenue change. For this year's election, ballots should be returned by mail no later than October 25th. Or voters may use 24-hour ballot drop boxes up until 7 p.m. on November 2nd. Reporting for KSUT News, I'm Sarah Flower.
We have more local and regional news coverage at ksut.org and more election coverage coming up in a few minutes with a report on one of this year's ballot measures. You're listening to Four Corners Edition on KSUT Public Radio. High housing prices mean local workers are getting priced out of the communities they serve across the Mountain West. One nonprofit in Southwest Colorado is trying to make small town housing affordable by turning to a factory built homes. Matt Hoisch with KOTO Radio reports.
Housing takes time. Kiefer Perino knows this. He's been working on one affordable housing development for local workers since before the pandemic.
It's been a couple years versus a couple months in the making.
Perino is the mayor of Norwood, Colorado. The roughly 600-person town is shaping up to be the first to get about two dozen deed-restricted workforce housing units from a new initiative launched by a local nonprofit, the Telluride Foundation. They're taking a simple but potentially powerful approach, building houses for less money.
If you work backwards from a teacher in Norwood, they're making $41,000, they can afford a $180,000 home.
That's Paul Major, president and CEO of the foundation.
Can we actually deliver a $180,000 three-bedroom, two-bath, two-car garage home?
To get the cost down, Major breaks it into three buckets: land, financing, and construction. When it comes to land, the foundation is trying to get it for free. San Miguel County has donated the parcel of land in Norwood. For financing, a mix of public and private donors have put forth low-cost capital. Finally, there's construction.
The first thing that comes onto a on-site construction project is the dumpster, because 30% of all materials that come onto a construction site are waste. They turn out to be waste.
To solve that problem, the foundation has turned to off-site construction. Homes are pre-built in a factory and essentially installed onto the site. David Bruce manages the housing initiative for the foundation. He says that off-site building can reduce construction costs per square foot by about 75%. And he adds, there's nothing new about the approach.
People have been talking about that since the 60s. And one of the reasons it hasn't sort of taken on this effect and revolutionized the construction industry the way, you know, a Ford assembly line has is because, you know, there's a huge advantage just to you and me going to a building site, bringing some lumber with us, and there's a flexibility to build on site that is actually hard to calibrate and line up once you prefabricate everything.
For an existing example, he suggests I look into another similar large-scale development called The Farm in Buena Vista, Colorado. So I do.
Micah Salazar, I'm the chief operating officer of Fading West Development.
Fading West Development is the developer behind The Farm. So far, Salazar says, they've built 86 houses using off-site construction, and all of them have sold for between roughly $200,000 and $500,000. And he notes, even though they're not deed restricted, a little more than 80% of the people living in them are part of the local workforce.
We really can't build them fast enough at this point.
The best way that I can put it is the impact has just been huge.
Duff Lacey is the mayor of Buena Vista. He says he hasn't heard anything negative from his constituents about The Farm, but he notes the factory-built units are still a couple hundred thousand dollars. So he thinks they're not a cure for all the region's housing challenges, but they fill a void.
There's still a gap, but this is definitely taking care of a sector that is looking for housing.
Of course, there's no guarantee the Telluride Foundation homes will sell as quickly as the Buena Vista ones, but Major is confident. A study found there's pent-up demand for over 30 affordable homes in Norwood, more than the foundation plans to help build. They're also working on similar projects in nearby Nucla, Ridgeway, and Ouray. All in all, the projects could result in over 100 new deed-restricted homes for local workforces. And, if all goes well, more could follow.
We see this as an opportunity to potentially see this work in a pilot format and potentially scale this in other parts of rural Colorado that need new housing construction.
Rick Garcia is the executive director of the Colorado Department of Local Affairs. He says once they see one or two of the projects completed and homeowners moving in, the state is prepared to help other communities take a similar approach. The Telluride Foundation hopes to break ground in Norwood next year and have folks moving in by fall 2022. For KOTO and the Rocky Mountain Community Radio Coalition, I'm Matt Hoisch.
This story is part of a collaboration between Rocky Mountain Community Radio and the Solutions Journalism Network. Reports will highlight housing solutions across the Mountain West. We'll have another story in the series coming in a few minutes. KSUT's Four Corners Edition continues in a moment with a look at Proposition 120, which seeks to lower property tax bills but is turning into a political battle. That's next.
Four Corners Edition is brought to you by Spine Colorado and listeners like you.
This is Four Corners Edition on KSUT. Help us continue to cover the region, the state, and beyond by supporting KSUT. Your donations make local and regional news coverage possible. Become a sustaining member or make a one-time donation at ksut.org or tribalradio.org. Just click on the donate button to get started. Thank you. With home value skyrocketing, Colorado voters have a chance to significantly lower their property tax bills this November. But Proposition 120 is more complex than it seems. Our Capital Coverage reporter Scott Franz has more on how this question is pitting conservatives, educators, and state lawmakers against each other. It's a high-stake battle that may stretch on even after Election Day.
Financial analyst Chris Brown says it would take more than a single beer to explain all the nuances of Proposition 120 to the average voter. It's touted as a permanent 9% property tax cut for business and homeowners. But
it really might be the case that what voters see on their ballot and what they vote on is not the final outcome in terms of the impact to their tax bill.
Brown is a researcher at the nonpartisan Common Sense Institute based in Greenwood Village.
The state legislature this year passed Senate Bill 293, which intentionally changed and altered some of the property tax classifications.
This resulted in a lowering of property taxes by about $200 million for the next fiscal year. But knowing that this measure was in the works, the bill also had a side effect, limiting who could actually get a tax break if Proposition 120 passed.
This appears to be a poison pill against the proposition.
Republicans, including Senator Ray Scott of Grand Junction, were concerned lawmakers were trying to water down a tax cut being pursued by voters.
If taxpayers, single-family homeowners in particular, approve it, only multifamily property owners get a 9% break.
But Senator Chris Hansen, a Denver Democrat, defended the legislation, saying single-family homeowners should be treated differently because governments tend to spend more money providing services to them, from trash collection to firefighters.
And some studies have shown that as much as a 50% reduction in capital investment and a 15% reduction in service costs for high-density developments.
In other words, letting single-family homeowners get another tax break would result in a much bigger hit to the state's checkbook.
Again, layers of complexity here.
Which brings us back to today. Chris Brown says the battle over Proposition 120 may not end on Election Day.
If voters approve this, the final impact will be determined in courts.
And this is already on the mind of conservative activist Michael Fields. As the author of Proposition 120, he says he would probably be the one suing the legislature if it passes.
This is money that is not in people's pockets then. They're spending on taxes. You know, what other things do they struggle with when government, you know, has bounced back quicker than anybody expected?
Fields says property values have gone up rapidly during the pandemic, adding that lawmakers did not go far enough with their tax cuts. But others are involved, including local governments, fire departments, and school boards, all stand to lose hundreds of millions of dollars if voters agree to the ballot question. Studies suggest it would hurt the most in resort counties like Pitkin and Eagle.
It just exacerbates the inequities that exist within our communities.
That's Amy Baca Olert. She leads the Colorado Education Association, the state's largest teachers union.
Those communities that have been able to go to their voters and to ask for voters to, raise their taxes to support their local school districts. And even when that happens in some communities, because they have a lower property tax base, it's not the same as that happening in, say maybe the neighboring community.
But many are struggling because of the pandemic, and supporters like Fields say they need relief now.
I think about people on fixed incomes, seniors, people that are living paycheck to paycheck. A big increase in property taxes can have a big impact in them keeping their houses over the long term.
Certainly, we have all struggled, especially recently through COVID.
But Olert hopes voters will also think about the ripple effects.
I would hope that people would take the time, as any good educator would say, to do your homework, to really understand what are the unintended consequences of voting on something like this could have.
If Proposition 120 is approved and courts do not overturn the law the legislature passed, Chris Brown says the immediate impact of 120 would shrink from $1 billion in cuts to about $150 million, and only commercial, multifamily, and lodging properties would get tax breaks. Regardless, Brown says school districts would be shielded somewhat by the billions in federal coronavirus relief money they've been getting.
Now, it's not a perfect one-to-one match in terms of being able to use those COVID dollars in the same way. However, a lot of that money can be used to fill priorities and needs.
Opponents of 120 counter that permanent tax cuts could reduce the state's ability to respond to wildfires that are larger because of ongoing drought. To cushion the blow, supporters included a provision letting the state keep up to $25 million annually that it otherwise could not spend because of the Taxpayer Bill of Rights, or Tabor Amendment. I'm Scott Franz in Denver.
Scott also explored some other measures on this year's ballot. Explore those stories at ksut.org. And now, another report in our ongoing coverage of solutions to the housing crisis in the American West. Will Walke with KHOL Radio in Jackson, Wyoming reports on a new program that's paying property owners to rent to locals.
Shannon Sears has lived in Big Sky for 6 years, and she's already moved 5 times. Sears is 33 and works for a title and escrow company, and she also sits on the local Chamber of Commerce. But ever since she moved to Montana from Texas, finding housing has been difficult.
At an age I thought was something I had already gotten past, I had to move in with multiple roommates just to be able to get a roof over my head.
Like in so many other Mountain West resort towns, the real estate market in Big Sky has skyrocketed during the pandemic. The median price of a single-family home is up more than 30% in the past year, and rents rose 65%, according to recent market reports. Sears lost her local housing earlier this year, so she found herself commuting over an hour each way every day.
The canyon has snow and ice, and it's dark in the wintertime. So to pass the time, you listen to podcasts, you wake up with your coffee, and you think about your day on your way home, the decompress. So it really wasn't too bad, except it pulls me away from my community.
39% of Big Sky commuters say they want to live where they work, according to a 2018 housing survey. And often, vacation property owners want to provide that exact service, but don't know how. Laura Seafang is executive director of the Big Sky Community Housing Trust. She owned a vacation rental herself for several years.
And I had no idea how to rent to a local because I didn't know any local people. I only came out and visited 2 weeks a year, And so I started from that perspective when we came up with this program and said, what are the things that get in the way of someone who owns a property out here from figuring out how to rent to a local?
Seafang says platforms like Airbnb make it so easy for property owners to make money off their investment. So she set out to create a similar program, but for local renters.
We help them figure out what to price their unit for. And we provide a lot of, we call it a la carte property management services, so that if a person just needs a little bit of help with their unit, we can give them that.
Inspired by a similar program in Lake Tahoe, Sifang started Rent Local in early 2020. She thought just the management services and appealing to people's morals would be enough. But by this August, she had only gotten 14 takers.
For a lot of people, we just kept hearing the answer that they make too much money on the short-term rental market and that they, you know, everybody has a motivation to make sure they can pay their bills. And so that's when we thought, well, we need to come up with a way to sweeten the pot.
That's why starting in August, Sifang got several grants from local community foundations to help incentivize rental owners. Now, if you lease to a local worker for 6 months, the minimum to qualify for the program, the Housing Trust will give you $1,500. For 2 years, it's $14,500.
The idea is just to let our workers have a sense of security that they're not going to lose their housing, which happens all the time here.
Since the incentive program started, 7 new property owners have already signed up. Sears, the worker we met at the top, matched with one of those landlords and moved into her own condo on September 1st with her cat.
Oh man, lucky doesn't even cover how I actually feel. I am so thankful to be in this spot. It is close to my office. It's close to town.
Sears also says she's feeling the benefits from her new home in her work life.
My business is a relationship-focused business. So, you know, being here in Big Sky where my customers are, where my clients are, I can't even tell you how important that is for my colleagues to see me around town as a local.
Still, the program's not perfect. Sifang admits it's been slow to get off the ground and takes a lot of convincing for property owners, and rent still might not be affordable for all workers. People who had already been renting to locals before August are also asking how they can get in on the action, or else they might switch to leasing to tourists. And then there's the risk of grant money running out. But Sifang says the Big Sky community has to stay focused on increasing the housing supply for locals quickly through whatever means necessary.
We really all appreciate these beautiful mountain communities we live in, but we have to figure a way to work together to support them and create a place that can be inclusive of all income levels and all the people who we rely on.
In the meantime, help wanted signs are up in nearly every business in Big Sky, Sifang says, and time is of the essence. Milwaukee, KHOL News.
We're debuting a new feature on KSUT called Western Slope Skies. It's produced by members of the Black Canyon Astronomical Society, who take a look at what's in the night sky for observance in Western Colorado.
Crisp, clear autumn nights are some of the best nights for stargazing here in Western Colorado. As you head out to enjoy the view, remember these 7 tips to help you make the most of your stargazing experience. Number 1. Find a dark site with an open view, away from city lights, roads, building lights, or other light sources. Number 2. Check the moon phase. Moonlight is a beautiful and natural source of light at night, though it will dilute the view of the stars. The nights surrounding the new moon are usually the best nights for stargazing. Number 3. For enjoyable stargazing, the weather needs to be calm and clear, so check the forecast before going out. Number 4. Dress warmly. Temperatures can drop quickly in the evening, and I've seen many would-be stargazers have to go inside because they didn't have enough warm clothes on. Dress warmer than you think to enjoy the night sky. You can always take layers off. Number 5. Probably the most important tip for night sky enjoyment is to use red lights as flashlights. Red lights won't ruin your night vision like white and blue light, and they will allow you to see while keeping your eyes adapted to the dark. Number 6. When stargazing, it helps to know what you are looking at. Free monthly star charts are available online, or buy a planisphere and have a year-round map of the stars. Members of the Black Canyon Astronomical Society receive bi-weekly observing highlights as a membership benefit, so become a member today. And finally, number 7, learn some star lore. Everyone loves a good story. The night sky comes alive when the stars are woven into heroic tales of love and war. There are so many wonderful stories from cultures all over the world to help us learn about the stars. Half the beauty is after dark here in Western Colorado, We are so fortunate to have access to such a breathtaking view of the night sky. So get outside and enjoy the view. Whether camping or at home, the best thing you can do to protect the night sky is to turn off or properly shield your lights. Another great way to help protect the night is to become a member of the International Dark Sky Association and gain access to a worldwide network of dark sky advocates. Western Slope Skies is produced by the Black Canyon Astronomical Society. I'm Aaron Watson with the International Dark Sky Association Colorado Chapter. Learn more about dark skies and become a member of the International Dark Sky Association at www.darksky.org.
That's Western Slope Skies. Hear episodes once or twice a month on Four Corners Edition. Hear archives of the Green Review at ksut.org.
Generating resilience environmentally, ecologically, naturally, green.
Can mushrooms save the planet? That's what's on our mind today. Welcome to the Green Review. I'm your host, Shalina Luna. Today we have Rain Grant, who is filmmaker of the documentary, Can Mushrooms Save the Planet? But even with a question a little closer to home, Rain, how can we start on a local level?
That's such a good place to start is right at home, you know? How can we feed our family? How can we keep ourselves and our families safe, especially with, you know, things like COVID or just even cold and flu season? You know, you've got medicinal mushrooms. We have food mushrooms that you can grow in your greenhouse or in your, you know, in your work space, you know, wherever you can find room for that. Learning how to go into the woods and get the medicinals or the foods like our porcinis and our chanterelles. I started the group, the Four Corners Mycological Society. It's an educational ID group. So that's one way you can start locally, is just by feeding yourself.
For more information on the documentary, Can Mushrooms Save the Planet? And more info from our head mycologist, Rain Grant, please visit us at www.thegreenreview.solutions.
Hear archives of the Green Review at ksut.org. This is Four Corners Edition. The program is a presentation of KSUT Four Corners Public Radio and Tribal Radio. The production staff include Ken Brott, Stasia Lanier, Sarah Flower, and Lorena Richards. Mark Dugan is senior producer and editor. Our theme music was composed and performed by Jonas Krushkin. New episodes air Friday morning at 8:30. They're also archived at ksut.org. Thanks for listening. I'm Lorena Richards.